welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. Our guest today is Ossian Ward, head of content at the Listen Gallery, with his review of his favourite exhibitions of 2016. Ossian, welcome to the show.
Hi.
In general, and I don't know how sensible or sane a question this is, but can you think of 2016 as a good year for art?
All vintage. I don't know. I think it's always hard to tell in the heat of the moment. There were some shows that I missed that towards the end of the year, there was a big show at the Haus der Kunst, which is supposed to be this kind of summing up of the modern age. And there were a couple of other things, Tino Segal in Palais de Tokyo. So there are a couple of things that have yet to be kind of decided, if you like, by the end of the year, whether they add up to a vintage year. But I would say 2017 has Venice, Documenta, Basel, Munster, all at the same time. So everyone's kind of looking forward to next year as being the blockbuster year.
In the art world, because I know that the same vaguely hopeful conversation comes up in the music world in times of what look like they're going to be, well, as the Chinese curse would have it, interesting. People, I guess, in the visual arts world try to grasp at that straw that at least it may provoke interesting things on the artistic front. Not that that's necessarily much consolation, but is there still that relationship, do you think?
Yeah, it's hard for some of the museums and institutions to react quickly enough.
Obviously.
Without wanting to blow my own trumpet, we did an event a couple of weeks ago at the Listen Gallery on one of Ai Weiwei's works, which is like a social platform made of these old Chinese columns that had been kind of smashed and just the plinths left there. So I thought we should do something, a performance to kind of activate this space. So we had 15 people performing, talking, political activists, the chairman of Greenpeace, all sorts of people kind of trying to respond to what was going on now. And I think, yes, you will find that next year that people will be trying to make sense of this. But museums and institutions kind of do work a bit slower. They're on 2 or 3 year schedules. So leave it to the smaller spaces and, you know, the kind of more reactive people to be able to respond quicker.
Okay, well, let's look at the things that you have seen, or your favourites of the things that you've seen. We're going to begin in South Korea. This was the Gwangju Biennale, which has become quite an event in Southeast Asia, yeah. Indeed on a global scale even.
Yeah, and actually, funnily enough, talking about what kind of responded to this year, this was felt to be quite a messy biennial. There wasn't a really strong theme, lots of artists, and the spaces themselves don't lend themselves, you know, it felt cluttered and busy. But actually, that also responded to what the year we had. It was difficult and tough, and you kind of felt frustrated at every turn. And of course, with all of these things, there are works we will have seen before. So there was a big Hito Sterile installation that people will have seen previously. But it felt, in a way, difficult enough for the year that we're having. So I found that interesting because, yes, Gwangju has been going for a long time. It also has its own political background.
It has its roots as a hotbed of dissent, yeah. Doesn't it, from the pro-democracy uprising in 1980?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that still really kind of casts a long shadow. And there were a few artists who take that on. Every biennial, I think, artists are conscious of that. But it didn't feel overtly political or kind of harking back to that. It was more subtle in a way. And I like that about that. I felt that actually South Korea, you know, also had two other biennials at the same time. There was a very good one called the Sima City Media Biennial, which was lots of video and audio and sound. That was very good. And there was yet another one called the Busan Biennale, which I didn't go to. But it strikes me that there was also, at the time I went, a gallery weekend, which I think is another way, like building yourself a big museum, like a Bilbao Guggenheim, is another way to get people to come to your city when you want to sort of put a marker down, a cultural marker. So there's obviously enough going on in South Korea to warrant all these events in the gallery weekend, etc. They've got great institutions, great museums, great collectors, some really good galleries. It's just, it's not so easy to pop over there as you would for Berlin that weekend.
You know? Not from London, certainly. Yeah. But was there anything in particular at Gwangju that really grabbed you?
Yeah, I mean, there were a few works where, you know, you had to really think about that past. So there was a wonderful piece, I can't pronounce the artist's name, but it was Natasha Sagar something. And she's made this work where you have a set of headphones which you plug into this, looks like a giant Lego piece, but each of one of those has a different sound relating to a bit of spoken word history, a political speech, a bit of gunfire from the aforementioned uprisings in the 1980s in Gwangju. You know, a kind of weird sonic landscape, and I think the actual bass itself was meant to resemble a tank or something. But, that was quite responsive to the time. There were a couple of other pieces I'd seen before, but I don't know. I felt like the entire South Korean scene seems to be moving in the right direction. They have great museums. There was another good show of someone called Kim Soo-ya at the MMCA, which is a relatively recent build in Seoul. So, in terms of the destination where I felt most was alive this year, it was definitely there.
Okay, well, let's take a look at another exhibition a little bit closer to where we are sitting, and we will try very hard for the purposes of this discussion to avoid any jokes about captive audiences. But listeners will see what I've done there. I have done the joke by going around saying I wasn't going to do the joke and thereby doing it. So you win twice, basically. You get to make the cheap joke and be morally superior while doing so. This was an exhibition at HMP Reading, Her Majesty's Prison Reading, which was an actual jail until quite recently, but which of course does have its own artistic heritage as such, it having been the site of a creation of a cornerstone of English literature.
Mm. Well, it was indeed where poor old Oscar spent not his final years, because he was released, but he didn't last long after that, truth be told. So Oscar Wilde's Ballad of Reading Jail is an epic poem about his time there. He wasn't really supposed to be writing it, but eventually he got released to use pen and paper. I mean, it really was hardship. I think they had this penal system that was, based around solitary confinement and various other things. And although you can't feel all of that now, like you said, it feels like a very recent place. It was a juvenile detention centre until quite recently, and there are all these layers. You get the Victorian prison with its kind of red iron bars and quite difficult looking stairways, and then you've got a bit of barbed wire and a bit of a kind of newer institutional feel, so you get the layers of time that were there. And what Art Angel did was to install works by artists, some of whom had made new works in response to the cells, some of which had written poems and letters, such as Ai Weiwei wrote a letter to his son about his detention, and other authors and thinkers and people who'd experienced incarceration themselves. So that was very powerful. You would kind of go into a cell and just be sat there with your headphones on listening to this kind of torturous tale.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask about, because prisons, especially the old school variety prisons, and HMP Reading was very much your old school Victorian hellhole, basically. Mm. They are by definition overwhelming, overpowering environments. They're designed to be like that. Even before you start trying to hang artworks in them or turn them into works of art, was there an issue at all with the surroundings overwhelming the exhibits?
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but be overawed and overpowered by the very setting itself. And actually, Art Angel did an amazing job, because they weren't given a very long turnaround between, Reading Council or whoever it was, the prison people who were looking after it, to say, OK, you can have this space. So they were given, a matter of months to put together an ambitious show. So, of course, some of the works were just tacked on the wall, like little prison posters. And, but they also played with that. And I think they did have a couple of installations by Robert Gober, who was allowed to kind of drill through the floor and put things in the wall. So you had this waterfall running underneath, which was like a beautiful glimpse of an Arcadia that's impossible for a prisoner. So they'd done some difficult installs. Doris Salcedo had installed a bed of kind of grass seeds that were being watered and grown inside. So there were some serious works. But of course, it's the power of the surroundings that gives emotion to these works, some of which, like I said, were just small portraits on the walls by Marlene Dumas of, she did a wonderful Oscar Wilde portrait, but of other kind of troubled characters. And yeah, I mean, obviously the atmosphere adds to it, but I wouldn't say that it detracted from the work. It more made you want to go on the journey with them and not just kind of be... It was a depressing, tough place,
I mean, I guess just to ask that question from the other way around, I mean, looking at it yourself as somebody who works in an art gallery, would it be possible to stage any kind of exhibition in a prison that didn't make any reference to the fact that this was a prison you were standing in?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, there is a role for art in that kind of an institution. I think it could be used. We often associate prison art with a kind of naive whittling of things or making things out of matchsticks. And the Kursler Trust have done that very well. They've actually come into prisons and produced exhibitions outside at places like the ICA of the work of the prisoners. And I think that's a really important way to do it. I think putting stuff into prison can be very crass. So this had to be done carefully and sympathetically, if that's possible, in such a harsh environment. And they managed to do that. Wolfgang Tillmans, for example, took these wonderful self-portraits of him in the mirrors, more or less as they were left in the prison, and they'd been scratched and, you know, mutilated, and that left his portrait looking scratched and mutilated. And, you know, very simple gestures can speak volumes in that environment.
Let's move along finally to an exhibition even closer to where we are sitting now. This is one that closed quite recently. This was Infinite Mix at 180 The Strand, which is not something that I think would occur to even most Londoners. The Strand is not a street that you actually spend much time on if you actually live here. It's sort of traipsed by tourists heading from
Somerset House to one bit
of the Monopoly board to the other. So what is now actually at 180 The Strand?
So it is an interesting building. That's part of it, but it's being converted slowly. I think it's an old office block which has been bought by a developer, and the guys behind Vinyl Factory, who you'll know, are being put in charge of the space. So they've been hosting events and one-off things there. But this was their first serious exhibition, and it kind of goes through this brutalist building into kind of a glass atrium. And what they've done is install 10 video works by some great artists into a kind of higgledy-piggledy walk around this building. So the building itself is quite spectacular and pretty raw and untouched. And they'd done a sympathetic build where they just built some kind of walls and let the videos do the talking. But they're big, immersive installations, kind of made the whole thing quite a spectacle. And it was sort of extended by popular demand. They had queues around the block, you know, so it was a big success. It wasn't exactly a sleeper show, if you like, of this year. But there were works within it that were, you know, not just kind of whiz-bang technology, although they'd built quite a wonderful 3D cinema downstairs for one of the pieces. So, yeah, it's becoming a destination, if you like. That's perhaps the point of the exhibition, is to prepare people for going to the Strand a bit more often.
Was there an overarching theme to the exhibits? Did the 10 installations that you mentioned have anything to do with each other, or were they all entirely separate and discrete experiences?
Yeah, I think to some extent the Infinite Mix was a good title. There's some relationship with what the Vinyl Factory do in their commitment to music and records. So you had a great new piece by Jeremy Della, who'd gone the world of dancehall in Jamaica. He'd also discovered this Japanese girl who loves to do this kind of dance and put her into a competition in Jamaica where she competes. But there's also some strange exotic scenes involving chameleons and blue screens, and it's quite crazy. But you've also got a Kendrick Lamar sort of music video turned into an art piece by Khalil Joseph, which is actually quite a powerful, almost diaristic version of his wonderful album, Good Kid, Mad City. So there's a musical theme. And Stan Douglas's work was actually one of the highlights, and he'd created a pseudo jam session from the 70s, which was made up of hours of footage, carefully choreographed. All the costumes and the guitars and everything looked very much of the period. And he'd cut it in such a way so that this jam session never ends. I mean, it's a four-hour loop, so you can, and people did, sit there for hours on end with it not really repeating, even though segments of it do reappear. And it was so there was a musical theme that ran throughout, I suppose.
I speak as one of those people who always feels like jam sessions are never going to end whenever one happens to break out at a show. Just finally, Ossian, before we let you go, this has been, of course, a review of 2016. Is there one particular thing you're most looking forward to in 2017?
Yeah, there is this confluence of all the things happening in the middle of the year. From a personal point of view, the Listen Gallery turns 50. So there will be some big celebrations for that. I suppose I'm not aware of that many big new museums opening. We had our Tate Modern and Design Museum and various things last year. So it's more this middle of the year when Documenta, Venice, Munster all happen in the same sort of 2 month spread. But also Documenta being interesting this year because it's based in Kassel in Germany as a kind of post-war cultural reappropriation of, you know, this part of Germany that had been bombed so badly. But they've now decided to open it out so that next year's offering actually happens in Athens as well. So there'll be an Athens portion followed by a Kassel portion. So everyone's kind of keen to see what that means or how that works or whether it does itself justice.
Ossian Ward, thank you for joining us. That brings us to the end of today's show. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Miller. The producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for a music review. But for now, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.